In the studio with me today, I have a fellow Bowdoin graduate, so go you Bears, and also esteemed member of the Maine community for many years. This is Kevin Hancock. As president of Hancock Lumber Company, Kevin is leading a six-generation family business that has operated since 1848. A graduate of Lake Region High School and Bowdoin College, Kevin travels often to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, where he is connected with residents and key organizations. He has created a nonprofit called Seventh Power to support initiatives on the reservation and has published a book titled Not for Sale, Finding Center in the Land of Crazy Horse. Thanks so much for coming in today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So this book is such an interesting book for me because it's almost a book about your process. It's not like, here's what I have found out and I'm summarizing it all. It's like you're kind of writing about it as it goes.
Yeah, in fact, this was definitely a book that found me. I didn't set out to write a book. I didn't even know I was writing a book at the beginning. I was just keeping a journal. And the story about Pine Ridge, the reservation, what brought me there, why it was so powerful for me, just kept calling me in. And I looked down at my journal one day and I said, oh my word, there's a... I'm writing a book. There's a story here that I want to tell.
Your story is interesting because it began before you started going to the Land of Crazy Horse. It actually kind of began when your family founded Hancock Lumber. And if I remember correctly, the town of Casco was incorporated only a few years before Hancock Lumber actually came to be.
Right, yeah. So Hancock Lumber began doing business in 1848. And the way I put that in historical perspective is prior to the first cannonball being fired in the Civil War, this company was in business here in Maine, and it's been owned by the same family doing basically the same thing uninterrupted ever since. And it kind of ties to one of the core themes of my book, which is this simple but powerful notion that we all come from a tribe. And in many ways, that tribe is a blessing. But the real point to me here is that our tribes pull on us to act in certain ways, to do certain things, to have certain beliefs. And as individuals who are all trying to find our own way, it's important, I think, to reflect on the tribe we come from and understand the ways in which it pulls on us. In both healthy and maybe sometimes not so healthy ways.
Your association or your closer association with Hancock Lumber came as a result of your father's passing away. You were in your early 30s, and I believe your father had lymphoma and had had it for a number of years, and he was in his early 50s. He passed away, and here you are. You're the guy. You're the man in charge of the company. And that's kind of an interesting way to have your life handed to you.
Right. So, and it was not anything I ever planned or predicted. When I graduated from Bowdoin, I had wanted to be a teacher and a coach, and I started my career at Bridgeton Academy here in Maine. And then my dad got sick, and I came to work in the family business. And right, he died in 1997, and at age 31, I was... president of the company, and thinking I was completely ready for that task as kind of a 31-year-old might, but not really realizing what would be involved and how much responsibility, I think more than anything, I would feel for trying to do right by the company, the legacy of the company, and the people who are connected to it.
Hancock Lumber, because it's been around for a long time, it has an enormous reach. You have, as of the time of this information, 10 retail stores, 3 sawmills, 425 people, 12,000 acres of timberland in Cumberland and Oxford counties. Those numbers may have even increased since they were written. That's a lot of responsibility. I mean, it's not just the bricks and mortar stores. You're being responsible for a lot of Maine families and Maine forests.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful organization, most importantly, and the lesson I really learned here only recently is that that I didn't have to take or internalize the responsibility or the pressure for doing right by the organization, that the organization was filled with people who believed in it, who were talented, who are capable, who are ready to share responsibility, and it was more about me learning to let go of the pressure a little bit, which happened coincidentally because of what I refer to as me losing my voice with the voice disorder I acquired back in 2010.
Yes, for people who are listening, you're probably thinking, his voice sounds a little different than I might expect, and you have spasmodic dysphonia.
Correct, which was something I'd never heard of before I got it. Most people have never heard of it. It's very, very rare. It affects perhaps 25,000 people total in North America, and it's a neurological disorder that only affects speech. So when you go to talk, the muscle, the neurons misfire a bit, and the muscles around your voice box contract and they squeeze, and it makes talking very difficult, at times painful. I run out of air, and I almost get dizzy, and it's can be a bit of a challenge. So I woke up in 2010 with this disorder, kind of right in the middle of the economic downturn, and was in shock for a while because I was like, well, okay, now what am I going to do? How am I going to help lead an organization without the consistent, comfortable use of my voice? And that turned out to be a blessing, because it forced me to stop in a way that I don't think I would have otherwise. It forced me to think in ways that I might not have otherwise, and it forced me to evolve a bit. It created an opportunity for me to evolve. So out of the disability came a lot more blessings than have come problems.
It almost seems as though in losing your voice, you translated it in from something physical that's, you know, goes through the air and other people hear it, into words. It's almost as if your voice became this book that you wrote over time.
Yeah, that's how I've experienced it. So I talk about losing my voice physically, but what I've come to think about is really searching for my own voice, kind of spiritually or emotionally. And what I came to see when I lost my voice a bit and had to reflect was that that I hadn't really been serving myself enough, which is a notion in our society that we almost shun, as weird as that sounds. It's often about sacrificing. It's often about putting others before yourself, and those things are really important, but like anything, to a point. And for any individual that that doesn't think enough about themselves, care enough about themselves, you end up compromising your ability to help others in the long run. So I started looking for a few simple ways to serve myself a bit more, and always having been a lover of American history and the American West, and I was particularly interested in the second half of the 19th century when America's Western expansion and manifest destiny ran into the Plains Indians. I decided that what I wanted to do was to go see what one of the biggest, poorest Western reservations in America looked like. Probably no one else would have picked that as what they wanted to do, but it was what I wanted to do, and I made some contacts and went there and was keeping a journal, and at the time, this was the fall of 2012, it was only going to be just a one-time trip, but it the place just grabbed a hold of me, and I kept going back, and I was keeping this journal, and the journal turned into a book. But most importantly, what emerged was a kind of a what's going to be a lifetime connection for me with Pine Ridge and the people of Pine Ridge, and a place that that is outside my own tribe, that really serves a lot of my own kind of spiritual, personal needs.
There's something about the pictures that you've taken for this book, and also the way that you describe it, that is a direct contrast to the life, the physical landscape of the life that you lead. There's, it's, you know, I think about Casco, and I actually drove on the way to Camp Sunshine the other day. I, for some reason, I got lost. I drove by your one of your sawmills, and there's trees everywhere. It's just trees. You guys are all about the trees. But you go out to Pine Ridge, and there's some trees, but there's mostly like openness. There's grass. There's, it's like this space. And so psychologically, I think it must have been so interesting for you as someone who's gone from trees and trees and trees and trees and trees to, okay, here's space and here's time and here's the ability to just listen to the grass as it, you know, as I walk over it. Or, you know, you spent time laying on your back, like observing wildlife. And mm-hmm. I mean, who, you haven't had that opportunity probably in your life.
No, I hadn't really. I hadn't really realized until I acquired the voice disorder the degree to which I was really consumed by my roles. And one of the things that that I write about in my book, as I came to feel, is that in this fast-paced, 24/7 internet-wired world that we live in today, especially in business, if you're not careful, it's always about bigger, better, more, bigger, better, more, and it never ends. But unless you stop and think about for what purpose and for what reason, and you've got to really, I think, be intentional about putting balance back in your life. And for me, Pine Ridge was a place where nobody knew me. I had no title, I had no role, I had no legacy, and I had no agenda, which is one of the other reasons I've done well there. You know, I didn't go there to fix them, which people have been doing for decades. I didn't go there to rescue them. I just went there because I was really interested in the place, and I became really attached to the people, and I like it there. So one of the things I talk about at Pine Ridge all the time is I go there for me. And I think it's important for them to hear that, because they're used to, in that community, people going there for them. But they have a lot there in their spirit and culture and place that is valuable to others. And I think it's healthy for them to know that they have a lot to give.
Well, even in this idea, the seventh power, that what there is out there for them to give is this kind of spiritual tradition of reconnecting with one's individual, I guess, gifts. And that is something that I don't think that we're all born from a tribe. So oftentimes we just kind of agree, all right, so, and I say tribe in a very broad sense, not necessarily Native American, but we sometimes agree to whatever somebody hands us. All right, you are the oldest child of this family and you're going to have these responsibilities. And that doesn't necessarily come from inside of ourselves. That comes from outside of ourselves. But if you reconnect with nature, if you go on a vision quest as you did, you can really hear your own heart more clearly.
Yes, absolutely. You know, in a lot of ways, that's really what my book is about. It's about being self-aware in a world that is very busy, in which our tribes pull on us. I think it's possible to live years, decades, or a life without really knowing fully who you are. And part of being aware is to recognize the impact your tribe has on you. So Pine Ridge is a really good example of this. It's the biggest, statistically poorest reservation in America. Unemployment is 90%, 90. So we had a national crisis a few years ago when unemployment reached 9%. There it's 90. There are people who don't know anybody in their family who's ever had a traditional job. And you can look at that community and say, well, they just need to get their act together. They just need to get on, and make a move. But it's not that they're missing anything. These are really smart, creative, resourceful, fun, loving people. They have all the skills essentially within them that you do or I do or the people we know in our communities, but their community has a big pull on them. And so what I like about my book is while it's in some ways I really bare my own soul about trying to search for my own identity, I'm hoping in that openness of a subject that's often not talked about, that it will help other people say, you know, I'm not the only one who's searching for more or who's thinking about who I am. And it will give people more permission. If someone from a perceived position of power or respect, like I might be in certain circles here in Maine, for example, if someone like me can just open up and talk about these things, I'm hoping it will help others do the same.
Well, I'm smiling as you're saying this because you open the book almost with talk about astrology, and I think it's evolutionary astrology. I'm not.
Yes.
So
right.
So you talk about something that, and Angus King actually in his foreword, he actually says, like, wasn't really quite sure what to make of this. This is Kevin Hancock, and he's talking about evolutionary astrology. And it's actually pretty weird and wonderful that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily expect that this Bowden kid grew up in Casco. We all have a certain idea of you. Like, his mom gives him, like, the gift of a reading from an astrologist, I think, in California.
Yep.
Where you learn about, like, possibly your tribe from before this life.
Correct.
And you're willing to just throw it on all out there. Like, here right. It is, guys. This is what I learned about myself. It's pretty great, actually.
Yeah, so in Angus's foreword, he calls me what he refers to as a straight arrow, and that these were things he wouldn't have necessarily expected from me. And again, that's part of the story of the book, because when I lost my speaking voice a bit and really began searching within myself, I realized that while I do love my roles, I love my tribe, I love our company, I'm passionate about it, that wasn't the totality of who I was, and that actually within me there was an artist who loved to take pictures, a writer who loved to tell stories, an activist who loved to advocate for the people of Pine Ridge, and then a little bit of a New Age Aquarian thinker with respect to evolutionary astrology, which is a really interesting field. The basic notion of evolutionary astrology is that the soul is the being, and the body, the physical body that we see, is just a vessel, and that everything in the universe from the beginning of the Big Bang, or whatever that original moment was, is here to evolve. It's here to learn and to grow, and that souls have multiple incarnations across time intentionally. We almost sign up to, in the hope of learning certain lessons or having certain experiences, not in a fate way as if it's predetermined, but that we put ourselves into certain situations that are likely going to challenge us to learn certain things. And that mine, in part, was learning to not internalize all the responsibility for leading a tribe, that it was okay to serve yourself, and that when you softened your own voice, when I softened my own voice, I actually, in time, woke up and found this calling that I'm so passionate about now, which is strengthening the voices of others. So now when I look at our organization, Hancock Lumber, I don't see anymore an organization that I lead or that's about my own sense of self or worth. What I see is a place where the 450 people that are on our team, they can lead, they can express themselves, they can grow, and that an organization where everyone leads can be so much more powerful economically, but more importantly, fulfilling emotionally and spiritually than an organization where just a few people lead. And in family businesses, sometimes they are definitely places where the family business owner leaders can hoard all the attention and responsibility. And I saw a new path. And then at Pine Ridge, and I ended up finding this at a place, ironically, where the people who live there feel like they have no voice in a different way. So one of the most common things you'll hear there is the phrase, essentially, they don't even know we're here, referring to the rest of the country, that we've just been marginalized and forgotten, and that what we think or what we say doesn't matter. So I've found this real calling. The connection between Pine Ridge and Hancock Lumber is strengthening voices in both places, doing less on my own of traditional leading and more of serving myself in a way that serves others too.
The entire premise of the book, Not for Sale, is, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, based on the fact that the government paid people, Native Americans, for their lands, but that they actually, in this particular case, and I think in many cases, the Native Americans refused to take the money because they said, well, this land was never for sale. You're just taking something that we now can't use the way that we wanted to, and you're giving us money, but that's just not possible. And so, you know, you actually suggest in the book that, listen, guys, you guys kind of need this money now. You know, you've held it in trust for, I don't know, like 120 years or even longer. You should probably take this money because this is something that could really benefit you. But that is a long time to hold on to something that you believe in so strongly.
Right. And the biggest thing I feel they're holding on to that hasn't yet been reconciled is the past. So as you say, that's what happened in 1980. The Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, ruled that the Sioux Indians had their land taken without just compensation in violation of their Fifth Amendment rights, and the court awarded damages, but the tribes wouldn't take the money. They said, no, you don't understand, our land is not for sale. And I love the spirit of that, you know, the values of that. But the price for growth is giving up your grievances. And part of what has to happen at Pine Ridge is the people that live there have to they have to let go a little bit more of the injustices of the past and start to look a little bit more at at the fact that their own really salvation and future lies within them, and start to move on. And so to me, as long as they don't take the money and that settlement hangs out there, it's just an attachment to the past. It's not so much about the money for me as it is about releasing the past, coming to terms with the past for the sake of releasing it, for the sake of moving forward. Because, again, we all come from a tribe.
Well, that's what I was just thinking about, is this is something, you know, you wrote about your father in very few paragraphs, very few sentences, and it's clear that you love him. And you start with, love this man, you end with, love this man. And in there are some, I think, very difficult to write sentences about how his influence on your life maybe wasn't entirely positive. And for you to have to, like, let go of whatever it was to sort of move forward, even in your own life and even in your own role as the head of Hancock Lumber.
Right.
That must have been very interesting.
Yeah, and it's difficult to even sort out. And but what I really came to feel is that it wasn't actually anything that he had done or hadn't done. It was how I, unbeknownst to me, had internalized the responsibility of being his eldest son and feeling responsibility for that legacy and this tribe and the company, which again is hard to describe because so much of that is really fun and exciting and valuable to me and meaningful, and I feel blessed for it. But I went a little too far with it, where it was really consuming me, and I was losing a bit of my own identity. And the Lakota have a great, one of their sacred rites is the vision quest, one of their seven sacred rites, which they call Hamblechia. And the concept of a vision quest is that individuals coming of age or at critical moments of their life would leave their community and sequester themselves in nature, alone, without food, water, or any provisions, for the purpose of seeking a deeper understanding of who they were, where they were at that point in their life, and where they wanted to go. And then that tribe member was to come back to the tribe and live in accordance with their own callings. So the real fundamental notion there was that it's Rudyard Kipling's, the strength of the pack is the wolf, and that if each individual was powerful, free, expressing themselves, that's when the tribe becomes most powerful. And I really came to see this for myself, too, that what I needed to do, as counterintuitive as it sounds, was serve myself more. And if I found what was really calling to me, that would, in turn, become the most powerful way for the longest period of time to serve others.
So you are now in the process of completing, well, I guess we keep going around and around in our lives on this, but the journey of the hero, this thing that you talk about.
Yep.
That's a Joseph Campbell idea, one that actually you talked with Ted Carter about. He's been on our show before, and I love Joseph Campbell, and I love this idea of the journey of the hero. And I believe that this journeying that most of us do, the hardest part can be coming back to where we begin and trying to live within wherever it is that we are, because you can recreate yourself any number of times or ways in other places, but it is coming back to your tribe, it's coming back to your landscape, and really trying to stay true to your own voice and self that can be the most difficult. And that's where you are at this present time.
Right. And and it was troubling and worrisome for a time. So as you say, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey is about separation. We leave our tribe. Initiation to experience some type of learning or personal growth, and then a return where we're called on to integrate what we've learned and share that back with our tribe. And I didn't really know for a long time how I would do that or connect the dots, and I was really worried actually that people would see me running off to Pine Ridge and think I was like dropping out of society or losing my mind or abrogating my responsibilities, you know. And so I didn't know what to do, but it all just came together. So the learning that I was able to integrate was that losing the consistent use of my voice was an opportunity to strengthen the voices of others. And I've since felt this vibrant calling to try to empower everybody on the Hancock Lumber team to lead and be authentic and to say what they think, and that is a better path for business and capitalism than the traditional path, and it's working, knock on wood, if you will. So this is the second year in a row Hancock Lumber has been selected as a best place to work in Maine, which is a really difficult status to achieve, and it's all based on employee third-party surveys. It has nothing to do with Kevin Hancock giving a speech about why he thinks Hancock Lumber is a great place to work. It's all about the people at work there saying, I love it here. And Pine Ridge, losing my voice, leaving at times to find myself in a more centered way, created all of that. So I didn't know how the return was going to work, kind of like the book itself. I just felt like something's happening to me here, and I just had just enough awareness to not mess it up, you know, to say something's happening here. You need to go with this and see where it takes you. And I had no idea it was going to be a book. I had no idea it was going to be a nonprofit for Pine Ridge. And I had no idea it was going to be a brand new way for me to think about helping to lead a company. So.
And I would say it's probably very good timing, because you are about the age, I believe, your father was when he passed away. You have two daughters, one of whom has graduated from college, another whom is playing basketball, I think, at Bowdoin.
At Bowdoin, correct.
At Bowdoin.
Go Bears again.
Go you Bears. But for you to be going through this yourself so that you can be an example for your children, your own children, as far as their own finding a voice and listening to their own inner selves, I think that's important.
I'm so glad you said that, because it's probably... the most meaningful thing to me is the message that if I were talking to my girls right now, the message I would want them to take from my book and my experience is be who you are, you know, and listen to what calls you, and whatever that is, or those places, people, and things are, that's where you should go. And there can be a real pull to do what the tribe's always done, which could be someone's calling. I'm not saying, you know, sometimes that is the calling. But yeah, that's what I want, is everyone I'm connected to, family, friends, co-workers, people at Pine Ridge, is to be aware, look inward for your calling, and listen and be willing to hear it and go there, even if it seems weird or uncomfortable at the time.
And I would also send out my thanks to your wife, who very patiently, was in this journey with you by saying, Kevin, go ahead, go do what you need to do. And eventually you actually brought her back out again to visit all of these places that became so important to you. So even just having that latitude, that flexibility within your relationship, I'm certain was meant a lot.
Yeah, I dedicated the book to my wife, Allison, because without her support, she really, if anything, pushed me to keep going back, keep writing, keep leaving. You know, I'd leave the family and the community for a week at a time, two or three times a year, and it it would look, you know, looks like a guy just in the middle of a midlife crisis, right? And my wife was so supportive of what I was doing, and her freedom for me to pursue this is a large piece of what made it possible. I don't know if that circle would have been completed without her. I'm really blessed that she is with me and I'm with her, and that she saw it that way.
Kevin, how can people find out more about Hancock Lumber and or your book?
So you can learn about the book and order the book at www.kevindhancock.com. KevinDHancock.com. You can also buy it on Amazon, at other bookstores in Maine. But on that website, I see all those orders and I sign all those books personally. So that's a great way to get the book.
And to find out more about Hancock Lumber in general?
Yeah, so you can find out more about Hancock Lumber at www.hancocklumber.com.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation, and having spent some time living with this book that you wrote, because it's considerable. If those of you who are listening who go out and get Kevin's book, and I hope there are many that will want to do this, it's an investment. This is an investment, but one well worth making, because there's something so raw and wonderful about this experience that you've gone through, and your willingness to share this with people is, I think it's significant. So we've been speaking with Kevin Hancock, who is president of Hancock Lumber. He is working with his sixth generation family business. He's operated since 1848, not him personally, but others in his family. Also father to two lovely daughters and husband. Thanks so much for coming in and being part of the story that we're sharing on the radio show, but also thanks so much for spending the time to do things that you feel passionate about and sharing that story through your book, Not For Sale.
I appreciate you inviting me, and as the Lakota say, Wopilatanka, which means big thanks.